Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this state, Tuesday, August 14th, 2018. Let's begin with some of today's headlines. The first headline reads, Substitute Teachers, Short Supply. Districts boost pay, benefits, incentives, trying to fill ongoing vacancies. This article is written by Noelle McGee. That's M-C-G-E-E. Students at Champaign's two balanced calendar schools have been in the classroom for only a little more than 2 weeks, but the district has already called in more than 30 substitute teachers, three at Barksdall Elementary and 30 at Kenwood. It's been split between professional development and sick leave, Kenwood Secretary Lori Earle said. While the K-5 school has a number of qualified, reliable subs, she said there are never enough, quote-unquote. We are always looking for more, added Ken Kleber, K-L-E-B-E-R, Unit 4's Human Resources Executive Director. In a district with 900-plus teachers and an additional 500 support staffers, substitutes are needed on a daily basis, though the number varies, Kleber said. But he and officials from other area districts, both large and small, said finding enough replacements has become a challenge amid a substitute teacher shortage in the state. First and foremost, the teacher shortage needs to be addressed, Westville School's Superintendent Seth Miller said, adding the substitute teacher shortage is a symptom of the fact that there aren't enough certified teachers. According to Miller, Westville was still scrambling to fill about 10 positions 2 weeks before students' first day on August 20th. Typically, it used to be harder to fill positions like special education, math, or science, or foreign language, Miller said. Now we're in a situation where it's across the board. We even have some regular elementary education teaching positions that are still open, he said. In our situation, we've had a job posted and have gone weeks without seeing a new applicant. Other districts are in the same boat. If they haven't filled their openings by the start of school, officials said they'll have to ask retirees and regular subs to step in on a long-term basis while they continue to search for permanent teachers. MS joins $100 a day club. This past summer, the state passed legislation to address those shortages. Among other things, it, 1, provides reciprocity for comparable and valid educator licenses from other states, making it easier for out-of-state applicants to teach in Illinois. 2, creates a short-term license so people who have an associate degree or have earned at least 60 hours toward a degree from an accredited institution of higher education can sub. 3, allows teachers with lapsed professional educators' licenses to qualify for a substitute teaching license. 4, increases the number of days retired teachers can work from 100 to 120 without jeopardizing their pension benefits. Those are big changes, and we want to promote them so we can increase our pool, said Hoopston Area Superintendent Susie Hesser, H-E-S-S-E-R. We'll take them whether they have a bachelor's degree or an associate degree, as long as they will be effective with our students. This year, several districts increased their daily base pay for substitute teachers to be more competitive. They include DeLand, Weldon, Fisher, and Villa Grove, whose rates went from $80 to $90, and Muhammad Seymour, whose base went from $90 to $100, making it one of 8 area districts to offer $100 or more. We also modified the long-term pay so that once you work one long-term position, you start at the higher rate on day one of your next long-term position in the same school year, said Nicole Rummel, R-U-M-M-E-L, MS Director of Instruction. Urbana adds incentives. Rummel said her district currently has about 70 subs, but many have days they can't work, she said, adding that some of them sub in other districts as well. There are very few days when we have 100% of our open sub positions filled. We typically fill all positions if we can keep the absences to less than 20. Once we start to have 20 to 30 openings, we're filling 85 to 95% of the positions. We had one day last year during flu season where we only filled 65% of the openings. When there aren't enough subs, Rummel and other officials said administrators and certified aides have covered classes and teachers have stepped in during their planning periods. Other times, classes have been combined or divided into other classrooms, and teachers have canceled professional development. In all districts, substitute teachers and other support staff can earn more after a number of consecutive days. And in some districts, teachers and aides who sub in the district from which they have retired are rewarded with higher pay. In May, the Urbana School Board bumped its daily rate from $105 to $110 and created a four-tier system of incentives designed to reward those who work the most. Prior to holding a job fair for substitute teachers and aides this month, Urbana had about 200 in its pool, said Human Resources Director Jacinda Cromer. While that seems more than adequate to fill the district's need for an average of 80 on any given day, she said it's deceiving. The problem is there hasn't been a lot of consistency, Cromer said, adding that some filled in on a one-time-here, one-time-there basis. Full-time subs in Rantoul. The tiered system aims to encourage existing and new subs to work on a regular basis and provide more consistency for the students. If subs work 15 days in a quarter, their daily rate will increase $5, allowing them to earn as much as $125 a day. You can also bump down, Cromer said, adding they would never drop below $110. On Thursday, the Rantoul City School Board will vote on whether to increase its daily rate from $115 to $120, making it the highest in the five-county area. The last time we had an increase was in 2013, said Superintendent Michelle Rampage. That's Ramage, who said the district typically needs between 3 and 10 subs a day, or as many as 20 to 25 during flu season. Ramage will also recommend increasing the daily rate for substitute teaching assistants from $75 to $85, and establishing rates for retired teachers at $130 a day and retired teaching assistants at $95 a day. Long-term subs, those who have worked 10 consecutive days in the same position, would make $125 a day, up $5, and full-time full-year subs would make $140 plus benefits. This is something new we're trying this year, Ramage said, of the full-time sub, which will be placed at J.W. Eater Junior High and used in needed classrooms. They could be part of the staff. They're doing the lesson planning. I'd love to have one at every building, maybe a couple at the junior high. The next headline reads, City Council Member Wants Assurance, No Friday Night Varsity Football at McKinley Field. This article is based out of Champaign and is written by Anthony Zillis, Z-I-L-I-S. A crucial intergovernmental agreement between the Champaign City Council and Unit 4 may have a sticking point. The proposal, which focuses on construction and zoning related to the $183.4 million plan to renovate Central High School and build a new Dr. Howard Elementary, among other projects, didn't include language that rules out varsity football at McKinley Field, as the council had previously discussed. To council member Greg Stock, S-T-O-C-K, whose district borders the southern half of McKinley Field, that's a problem. We want at least something that limits it, said Stock, who will discuss the proposal along with the rest of the council at tonight's study session. We were pretty clear, and it wasn't just me and Alicia Beck, whose district includes McKinley Field, at that council meeting, where we initially talked about this, so I was a little surprised that the language wasn't that strong, because I thought we were pretty clear that that's the direction and the route that we were going to go. The current plan is to build a new synthetic turf field at McKinley Field, where the sophomore and freshman teams will play games and the varsity teams will practice. The Maroons varsity football team would play its games at Tommy Stewart Field at Centennial, where artificial turf was installed last week, and a new home locker room will be built for Central. While acknowledging major roadblocks to having a full-fledged varsity stadium at McKinley Field, including lights and parking, School Board President Chris Klappel said the current language allows room for the possibility of playing some games at McKinley. I think that's also why some people are hesitant to have end-all language that says that this absolutely can't happen, said Klappel, who emphasized that the current plan is for Central varsity football games to remain at Centennial. Could some of the games be played on Saturday afternoon? There's been some discussion on that. I think this allows for that to be discussed. Stock is open to discussing the possibility of Central varsity games being played at McKinley Field on Saturdays. Friday night contests, though, are a non-starter in his mind. I think a Saturday day game, people aren't going to sleep or having kids go to sleep typically versus 9 o'clock on a Friday night, he said. And there wouldn't be lightning issues, obviously. I don't necessarily have a huge problem with that, but I think the Friday night lights kind of thing is too much of a burden on the area. If it's that big of a deal, they should look at the possibility of building facilities where they own the land north of town along Interstate Drive. I guess my concern is that this is not anything that was put in front of voters before the referendum. I guess this feels a little bit like, I don't want to say changing the rules, but changing the scope. Klopel said he's interested in hearing an open discussion on the topic, including at tonight's meeting. Could a football game take place there? Klopel said. Absolutely. Freshman and sophomore football is going to be played there, so certainly has the capability of playing varsity football there. But parking is an issue. Those types of things. I think that those are things that need to be discussed. The intention right now, and the only plan right now, is to play varsity football at Centennial. But there has been expressed interest absolutely to play at McKinley Field. But I know that there are some people who aren't interested in the possibility of them playing there, and apparently some city council members as well. The next headline reads, Urbana School District, suit claims pay raise cap unfair. Contract factors in age for teacher salary limits as retirement approaches. This article is written by Lindsay Jones and is based out of Urbana. A federal agency has filed a lawsuit against Urbana schools, alleging the district violated age discrimination laws by limiting salary increases for teachers over the age of 45. Lawyers for the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission said the district's practice of limiting salary increases for those teachers was a result of an unlawful provision in a collective bargaining agreement between the district and the Urbana Education Association. That provision stipulates that raises for teachers who are within 10 years of retirement eligibility are capped at 6% of their salary from the previous year. The EEOC argues that this constitutes age discrimination. Urbana Superintendent Don Owen said the filing wasn't a surprise. We've been communicating with the EEOC about this matter for more than a year, he told News Gazette Media on Monday. Basically, there was an EEOC investigation, and we shared with them everything that we had. Notes from when this was negotiated, everything we had about this, we shared. The suit dates back to an August 9, 2016 grievance filed by Urbana Middle School teacher Chuck Klopinski against the district. In it, Koplinski, K-O-P-L-I-N-S-K-I, alleged that he had been denied raises commensurate with experience and professional development on the basis of age. At the time of filing, Koplinski was 52 and within 10 years of retirement eligibility. It was because of his age, the EEOC argues, that he was denied $4,994 in earnings from the 2015-16 and 2016-17 school years, despite meeting various criteria for raises. If Klopinski were aged 40 instead of aged 50 when he completed the postgraduate classes, that would have entitled him to more than a 6% salary increase, and he would have received his full raise, EEOC Regional Attorney Gregory Gochanour, said. Instead, his raise was capped at 6%. The district's official response, signed by Owen, denied the original grievance. The district contended that provisions in its agreement with the union did not violate the Federal Age Discrimination in Employment Act, and such an interpretation was too narrow. Whether or not the creditable earnings limitation is applicable depends upon a teacher being within 10 years of eligibility for retirement under the teacher's retirement system, the district wrote. This is partially an age factor and partially a service factor. Moreover, as defense to any ADEA claim, the 6% language would constitute a reasonable factor other than age, as its primary factor is the avoidance of additional TRS contributions or penalties, not to limit salary increases strictly on the basis of age. Like other districts in the state, Urbana hoped to avoid penalties initiated by a 2005 law that sought to punish those that spiked teacher or administrator pay in the last few years before retirement. Prior to that law, some districts increased the pay of such teachers or administrators, which resulted in the state providing them with higher pension payouts. Earlier this year, Governor Bruce Rauner lowered that cap to 3% in what he called an effort to stabilize the pension system. Given the language in our collective bargaining agreement, we do not believe that language constitutes age discrimination, Owen said. The EEOC, however, disagrees. Urbana cannot try to avoid making a pension contribution required by state law by limiting the salaries of older teachers because of their age, said Julianne Bowman, director of the EEOC's Chicago District Office. Owen said other districts across the state are grappling with similar issues, and each is trying to figure out the best way to navigate the law. I've been talking to superintendents across the state who have gone through this issue this spring, some of whom are currently negotiating right now, he said. That TRS threshold has been one of the biggest issues in union negotiations. I do think the courts need to bring some clarity for the sake of the TRS, for the sake of school districts and school boards, and for the sake of teachers in this state. And now let's take a moment to look at our weather forecast over the next few days. This is provided to us by Greg Soule in his column on the weather front. Today, 86 degrees, cloudy, south to southwest wind, 6 to 12 miles per hour. Overnight, cloudy, a couple of showers and thunderstorms more so. After midnight, chance of rain, 60%. Wednesday, the high is 82, the low will be 68. Cloudy, a period of showers and thunderstorms. Chance of rain is at 70%. Overnight, chance of rain, 70%. Thursday, the high is 83, the low is 67. Partly sunny, a shower and thunderstorm in spots. Chance of rain is at 40%. Friday, the high is 84, the low is 64. Partly cloudy. Saturday, the high is 81, the low will be 65. Partly sunny, an isolated shower and thunderstorm in spots. Chance of rain will be at 30%. And now to follow up quickly on the substitute teachers article I started out this reading in this program, short supply. One day's pay. Which school districts offer the highest and lowest daily rates for substitute teachers? Let's find out. For answers, staff writer Noelle McKee surveyed 35 districts in Champaign, Douglas, Ford, Piatt, and Vermilion counties. $115. Rantoul City Schools, which will consider a $5 increase to the area's top payday at a meeting Thursday. $110, Urbana. $100, Champaign Unit 4, Gibson City, Melvin Sibley, Gifford, Muhammad Seymour, Oakwood, Paxton Buckley Loda, and Salt Fork. $95, Danville, Heritage, Rossville. $90, Bement, Sarah Gordo, DeLand Weldon, Fisher, Georgetown Ridge Farm, Hoopston, Ludlow, Monticello, Prairie View, Ogden, St. Joseph Ogden, HS, or that's St. Joseph Ogden High School, Thomasboro, Tolono, Villa Grove, and Westville. $85, Arcola, Armstrong Ellis, Armstrong Township High School, Arthur, Bismarck Henning, Potomac, and Rantoul Township High Schools. And $80, that's what's offered per day by St. Joseph Grade School in Tuscola. And now, top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of staff writer Ben Sigterman. That's Z-I-G-T-E-R-M-A-N, Sigterman. With the help of some Papadel's Pizza and a late night Saturday, the Champaign-Urbana Mass Transit District's website got a much-needed refresh. Around 12:30 a.m. Sunday, cumtd.com became mtd.org, with a cleaner design by MTD developer Ryan Blackman and a domain name that reflects what people really call it. Our passengers call us MTD, and the public does, and then we refer to ourselves locally as MTD and nationally as CUMTD, said Lisa Mead, the agency spokeswoman. It was time for all of it to be consistent. MTD bought the domain name within the past year for $5,000, Mead said. The redesign of the site, which was last updated in 2011, features a simpler school trip planner and more intuitive navigation that works well on mobile devices. It's a lot more simple to use, she said. The site is much more accessible and it's easier to find clearer answers to your questions. Most of the features made it through the redesign, though subscribers to the MyRide alert system for service disruptions will need to sign up for a new account. Online audience, what was trending last week at newsgazette.com, which in a 7-day period ending Sunday saw 1,070,655 page views. The three top stories. 1. After 27 years, CAM's getting new owner. 2. Atwood woman arrested for allegedly burning her own home. And 3. CAM sold to group, including Cochrane. No major remodeling planned. The three top sports stories. 1. A perfect start. Illini running back, ex-Centennial volleyball standout, begin life as newlyweds. 2. Shannon includes Illini in top 4. 3. Illinois among Whitney's final four. 3 top videos. 1. Bush showing leadership early in camp. 2. Training camp energy level, competition high. 3. Another step forward for Football Performance Center. And top photo galleries, the top 3. 1. U of I football camp, 2018, day 4. 2. On the town, final Burnham nurses banquet. And 3. U of I football media day, 2018. History, area history. In 1918, Food Administrator R.D. Burnham terminated restrictions on the sale of ice cream, wheat, and beef, though Burnham urged people to only eat beef from lightweight cattle. In 1968, construction had begun on the new Anderson's Grain Elevator northwest of Champaign on U.S. 150. Plans called for the plant to have a 60,000 bushel per hour capacity. In 2003, a proposed medical clinic at Urbana High School would be designed specifically for Urbana's school children and offer social and psychological services. International history, today's highlight. On August 14, 1935, President Franklin D. Roosevelt signed the Social Security Act into law. On this date, in 1947, Pakistan became independent of British rule. And, in 1969, British troops went to Northern Ireland to intervene in sectarian violence between Protestants and Roman Catholics. And now from our editorial page called Opinions. This is an article or column or submission written by Jim Nolan, N-O-W-L-A-N. Poverty doesn't limit your potential. I have been reading a 2017 report, Cycle of Risk, The Intersection of Poverty, Violence, and Trauma, by a century-old social services organization in Chicago called the Heartland Alliance. Since the stated objective of the organization is to end poverty, maybe it follows that the 43-page report seems to hammer away on the theme that poverty is the fount of all social pathologies. I beg to differ. Doing so will put these scribblings in the middle of an intense, ongoing, half-century-old debate about the roles of culture and poverty in shaping our society. The left tends to agree with the Heartland Alliance, while the right tends to see dysfunctional culture at the family and community level as the root of poverty, not the poverty itself. As I read the report, two families from my post-World War II childhood in rural central Illinois came immediately to mind. Please indulge me. Bertha Hughes of Lafayette, population 300, lost her young husband to a fatal heart attack in 1945 when her four children ranged in age from 13 down to 6. She was left with nothing but the family's $500 home, which had no plumbing. Bertha took in laundry, did sewing, and scrubbed floors. She told her children once that her own earnings one year were $940. Bertha also received $15 per child per month from Social Security survivors' benefits. Adjusted for inflation, the family's total income would be about $17,600 today, or just barely above the extreme poverty category, according to the Heartland Alliance. "We were poor," recalls Pete Hughes, now 82, "but we didn't know it. I guess we did know it when we were directed to pick edible dandelion leaves from a fence line on a field across from the house. This was a task I did not want. Knew we were at the bottom of the barrel then. I know it was an awful time for Mother, but she persevered." Bertha told her children simply, "You have to work and you have to go to college." My friend Pete recalls working at Grimm's Grocery in Lafayette, sweeping out and stocking shelves each morning before school and on Saturdays. He and his brothers worked on farms in the summer. A teacher told Bertha, who knew nothing of higher education, about tiny Blackburn College in Carlinville. Students had to, and still have to, work 15 hours a week for the college, to include even bricklaying for a new building in Pete's day. As a result, tuition, room, and board in 1954 totaled $400 a year. That's $3,747 in today's dollars. The three Hughes boys went to Blackburn, and they all achieved. PhD Pete is a retired, beloved school superintendent. John became an orthopedic surgeon. He drove a Chicago Transit Authority bus during medical school to help pay tuition at the University of Illinois Medical School. Their sister, Julia, manages a successful law firm. And in turn, their children are doctors, veterinarians, dean of an engineering college, and more. Over in the neighboring town of Toulon, T-O-U-L-O-N, population 1,200 then and now, where I grew up, Joe and Dora Harrington reared their five children in quiet modesty. Joe worked for the town's water and sewer department, and Dora stayed home. The family went religiously, you might say, to the Baptist church. The children all became model citizens. Sarah Jane attended Illinois Wesleyan University and authored a book about her husband, a distinguished general. In 1945, the high school held its first homecoming celebration, and Dave Harrington was elected king by his fellow students. The Harringtons were the sole African-American family in Toulon. Anecdotal illustrations are powerful, but they don't prove anything, of course. And more money is better than little money in a household. Yet these cases show that poverty alone is not a bar to achievement. Family, community, church, attitude are more important. Sure, things have changed. I'm guessing there are fewer jobs around for young people now. And poverty is much more concentrated than it was then. My illustrations are for middle-class farm towns. And the family has changed. The culture of the post-war period offered little room for divorce. Many couples suffered through hideous relationships, I'm sure, because of good old-fashioned peer pressure, and until the kids were through school. And there are also success stories today in high-poverty neighborhoods. One of the brightest students I ever had, this one at Knox College, was an African-American who was reared in a Chicago housing project by her determined, loving grandmother. This former student is now a professor at a college in the East. I also had a white young adult student assistant at Knox who had three children. She became the partner of a black woman. The couple reared my students' three children nicely, went to graduate school, and the couple are now professors. I worry, nevertheless, that policymakers and social service providers put way too much emphasis today on the deleterious impact of poverty, which can itself become an excuse for not achieving. Instead, we need to focus on strengthening the family and community and on creating positive cultural values in benighted communities. The next headline reads, Felony Aggravated Arson, Residential Arson, Woman Charged for Setting Fire to Own Home. This article is by Tim Mitchell and is based out of Tuscola. An Atwood woman accused of setting fire to her own home last week faces two felony charges. Christina Harris, age 34, was charged Monday with one count of felony aggravated arson and one count of felony residential arson. Douglas County State's Attorney Kate Watson said the penalty upon conviction for the former is 6 to 30 years in prison and 4 to 15 years for the latter, which is non-probationable. Harris, who is being represented by attorney Tom Bruno, is being held at the Douglas County Jail. A bail hearing was set for today. According to a police report, about 7 p.m. Thursday, Harris was found with a lighter and propane torch in the yard of the home she shared with her husband in the 200 block of Eric Drive while it was burning. Nobody else was at home at the time. The house owned by Scott and Mary Alice Harris was substantially damaged before firefighters from Atwood, Arthur, Hammond, and Arcola put out the fire. The blaze engulfed the house, garage, and a nearby travel trailer. Atwood Police Chief Rob Bross, BROSS, said Harris admitted to police Thursday that she set the fire because she had been served with divorce papers earlier in the day. The next headline reads, Chicago Police, Drop in Weekend Violence Reported. This is written by the Associated Press and is based out of Chicago. As an additional 600 police officers patrolled five violent Chicago police districts over the weekend, the number of shootings dropped and no one was killed. Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson on Monday said the districts will continue to see additional patrol officers until we're comfortable things have stabilized. In increased patrols are an effort to prevent a repeat of the August 3rd through 5th weekend that left at least 71 people shot, 12 of them fatally. Authorities say about 35 people were shot during the past weekend. Johnson said the difference between the two weekends was not because the police department did anything particularly different. He said crime is cyclical, and it's never known when this stuff is going to pop. Johnson said officers paid particular attention to large gatherings in five of the city's 25 police districts. The five accounted for more than half of the past weekend's shootings. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been the reading of Part 1 of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, August 14th, 2018. We thank you very much for listening, and we'll resume with the reading of Part 2 of the News Gazette shortly, so please stay with us. Thank you again for listening, and have a wonderful day.